You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Hey guys, Ricky Hollywood here. Make sure to check out Around the NFL on NFL Network on Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. If that time doesn't work for you, well, you're in luck. It's re-airing again on Friday at 10 p.m. Eastern, and then again on Saturday at 2 a.m., 6 a.m., and 10 a.m. Eastern. No excuses, guys. Let's go. Let's get to the show.
The Around the NFL podcast is building a mansion on Stidham Corner.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I'm coming to you from a city filled with heroes in bunkers. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal, what is up, boys?
What's happening?
I think Hey Dan still has you beat by a little bit there, Greg. But
just waiting. Effort. I mean, the show is incomplete, and I'm waiting. You know, the introductions are incomplete.
Of course, because also joining us, sitting in the Chris Wessling chair, Chris Wessling, who we will hear from later, is the great legend, one of the legends of the Around the NFL podcast, friend of the show, the great Lindsay Rhodes of NFL Network. What's up, Linz?
Hey, we're more well-rested than Chris Wessling these days.
Yeah, well, that's good. But you are like us. You also, Lindsay, have two children.
Mm-hmm. I do.
So quarantine life, it seems to be treating you well, and that you don't look like you've gone insane, so that's good.
Look like it.
All right, it's important. Coming up on today's show, this is a good one. We got Lindsay in the building, or on the podcast. Buildings don't exist anymore, at least how we knew them to be. We are going to continue our Wheel of Team series with the New York Giants and Bob Glauber of Newsday. Speaking of friends of the show, will be joining us for that. Also, Greg, you've done much work on your projected starter series over on the .com, and you have some takes, you said.
I mean, I've done so much work, I can distill it down to 1 minute, not waste everyone's time clicking through 16,000 words or something. It's all down to 1 minute that we can talk about. Yeah,
it's efficient.
Just throwing this out there, is that maybe an indictment of the series?
Well, that was a joke. Yeah, that was the joke. Yeah. But people should read it. I think people still are interested in reading articles on websites, but not as many people as before, I think we found.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
It's a nice series. I've dug into it. It's a good read.
I do enjoy it.
If Greg needs that,
that was very nice. Mark, thank you,
Mark.
Nice to you.
Thank you, Mark.
And yes, Wes and Lakeisha, who knows, maybe even Baby Link will join us at the end of the show. But before we do that, with Lindsay Rhodes in the virtual house, let's do some news. All right. Speaking of virtual, the virtual owners meetings are going on, and all these rule proposals that we've talked about on this show and on our network program that, you know, really served as something to talk about the last couple of weeks. Now we see if some of these rule proposals go into effect. One that is not going into effect most likely in 2020. The NFL owners have tabled the measure that would have allowed teams a 4th-and-15 conversion attempt in lieu of an onside kick. I guess they just didn't think it was all there, so they didn't even bring it to vote because it would not have passed. So I guess it's still possible it could happen this year, but more than likely this is something that's going to take some tinkering. I have takes on this that differ from the other boys on the show, but Lindsay, I was wondering what you thought about this idea of the onside kick alternative.
It would certainly be exciting. Doesn't it feel a little bit arbitrary? Like, hey, here's just, instead of doing this thing that is a kick where you would normally kick, we're going to just give you the ball in a totally different, like, here's a spot. Here's the, like, it just feels like, okay, this is fun, but like, it just feels weird to me.
But aren't all rules kind of arbitrary? If you think, I mean, at some point you just had to, it's like, why is it 10 yards to gain a first down? It's like, you just got to make up some, why is an extra point, you know, why do they kick it at certain, you just got to make up the rules. You got to change them up every once in a while.
But actually, no, you don't have to change them up every once in a while. And I'm definitely Team Rhodes on this one. It did feel a little arbitrary, and it felt like something that you would cook up in your backyard for a football game. And I don't want the league to make changes for the sake of changes. And I understand the onside kick has become an almost irrelevant play, almost, but not quite, because of the safety measures that went into effect with you can't get a running start anymore, which was all there for player safety. And I get that. But my feeling on it is maybe we could look into ways, alternatives to increase the percentage chance of recovering an onside kick while also not putting players in added danger. Maybe that's impossible, but I never understood it. And Mark, to me, the one thing that also jumped out to me, the more I thought about it, it just seems like too much of an advantage for a team that's losing. Like this idea that you could be down multiple scores, and if you get hot and you go on a long march down the field, you have a chance to stay on the field and have a rip-roaring comeback without the other offense even touching, setting foot between the lines. I'm not in on that either.
I like the rule more than you do, because until you fix the issues with the onside kick, you can think of a billion times that the team you're rooting for has been in a scenario where like the onside kick is your last chance at life. And to reduce that play the way they have in terms of being able to successfully convert those, you're out of options. So they have to come up with something. It's instructive that this was a pretty, I don't want to say zany, but it was a pretty deep cutting rule change. And this Zoom call with 32 billionaires on it, it was a little too rich for them. So they said no. Ooh. So you should be happy, Dan.
I mean, and if a team gives up like three straight touchdowns and three straight fourth and 15s, you deserve what you get. I don't get the argument that's like, oh, that makes it too easy to come from behind. Well, what's wrong with that? Let's have some comebacks.
It just doesn't feel like football.
Risk attached to it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to give the other team the ball right there, if you don't convert it, then at least like the risk reward seems balanced in that sense.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, but I'm just saying, how about we try to fix the onside kick?
How though? But the problem is you can't peel back the safety.
That's not my job.
I know, but that's a nice solution. There's no solution.
Well, you won. You're on the
idea.
Side of the billionaires. That's, you know, we're for the working people in this pandemic.
Right. I think that's what comes out of this. You know, Greg and Mark are, you know, working class types. And you're up there in your little villa, wherever that is.
This seems a little sloppy, but that's fine. In other rule change news, one thing that did go through is that the owners voted to kill the end of game, quote, Belichick penalty loophole. It was the one where you could run a clock and keep a clock running and kill time by committing multiple dead ball fouls. And we saw Belichick do it, and then we saw get done to Belichick in the playoffs. And it was just ridiculous and stupid and wasn't fun to watch. So common sense carries the day. This is no longer a thing, Mark Sessler.
Yeah, and it shouldn't be. So, you know, they achieved something of, you know, logic based during this call that needed to go away.
Makes me wonder, like, how many other rules have been sitting there for 40 years being ready to be exploited. I hope Belichick's been, you know, digging through that rule book in Nantucket this offseason, come up with some new ones.
He would have found him.
Right.
Tough year. It's been
he came up with that one.
Out
of, I mean, he's been in the league a long time. He hadn't thought of that one before.
You know, he's going through an offseason now where he doesn't have a quarterback anymore, and now he doesn't have one of his precious little rules that he could skirt to his benefit.
He knew it was gone. He said it that night against the Jets. This rule will be changed, but in the meantime, I'm going to have some fun.
One other
changed him. I'm sure he's fine with it being changed.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true. One final rule change. The NFL will now allow teams to designate three players to return from injured reserve. The old boomerang rule, as it's known on the Around the NFL podcast. And that just makes sense too. More common sense. That's good, Lindsay. We like when, because, you know, with the volatile nature of pro football, this idea that you have to make these decisions when early in the season on a player, give the rosters more flexibility like this one.
I think this season too, when, you know, we don't know what it's going to look like from a health standpoint and COVID, and if somebody, you need as many players available to you as possible, because if you have players getting sick in the middle of the season and all of a sudden they're not available, you can't just have people who are arbitrarily not available to come back. I think that that makes sense this year in particular. Just get as many people on the field as you possibly can.
Yeah, I'd wondered, like 10 years from now, when you look at IR Boomerang, it started as one, then became two players, then now three. Would it be
everybody,
double, triple? Wait, why not? Because it's great for football that you could say, you know, you have three star type players on the shelf, or, you know, critical guys on your roster. Bring them all back. Like, make the end of the season meaningful and fun.
In other news, Mark, you're Cleveland Browns. Hot for Jadeveon Clowney. We've heard Clowney connected to Cleveland, but ESPN's Adam Schefter reported this week that the Browns have offered, quote, the most money to date to Clowney. And Schefter said on ESPN Cleveland, it's unclear exactly why he has not taken the offer. This is from Schefter. Why is that? I don't know. Is that not wanting to be in that city? Is that a lack of belief in the organization? I don't know what it is, but there's no doubt Cleveland has offered the most money to date. 27 years old, still on the market. Mark, do you want him?
I do. And I was told about a month ago on this show that I was, you know, next to insane for suggesting that Clowney would be a good fit for the Browns roster. I mean,
only by Dan. Only by Dan.
I also didn't say next to insane. So
it was actually our friend Steve Weiss who told me that it was a terrible idea also, because that locker room is too on edge. And, you know, by the way, it's okay if the Browns have more talent than people think is necessary for a Browns team. And I have no problem bringing Clowney in. You got Myles Garrett. They hung on to Olivier Vernon, which I thought if they went and got Clowney, maybe you move Vernon at some point, because there were a lot of whispers about that. I like that they didn't, because outside of Adrian Claiborne, you don't have much else at that position. And when they lost Myles Garrett last year, and you know that was a deserved removal from the roster, obviously, for the antics on Thursday night, that defense fell apart. So I have no problem adding pass rushers all over the place. It'd probably be a one-year deal. Do it.
Are you taking it as a slight, though? He's not taking their money right now. Maybe that's he's good for Cleveland.
He doesn't seem as interested as I do in this deal.
Idea what the best offer is? Like, what kind of ballpark? Is it even close to what he was expecting? Or is he just in a stage now where he's, like, resetting all of his expectations? Or...
I think it's a lot less than he was expecting. It's a good question to ask. And it makes sense if none of, even though it's the most money, it's not near what he wanted in terms of guarantees and multi-years. So why not just skip all these Zoom calls and wait till August, you know, to be on a team?
And I don't think it's a next to insane idea for Clowney to go to Cleveland, but talent is not really the problem on that roster, as we know. I know you just said, Mark, that it gets thinned out when you lose certain players, but you could say that for any roster. It's more, is he a personality fit in there? And I don't know. I don't think it's wrong to question what kind of fit they have in there, what kind of personalities they have in place. Is this somewhere where this guy would thrive, or he would become a headache and he'd cost a ton of money? I think it would be a risky move by the team. I still stand by that.
I don't know how risky it is, because they have the more cap space than any team in the league right now. And I don't know. I to me, it just feels like these players are only allowed to go to four or five locker rooms. We only trust four or five teams to handle anyone with a personality. I bump on that.
So many different
Jalen Ramsey
in Cleveland. Who are we pointing to? I guess,
like, just whatever, just bring in all the talent, like, figure it out.
What could go wrong? All right.
Well,
other news.
Could go wrong, as we saw last year. But.
Yes, a lot could.
I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying. I know they have they have new leadership there too. So maybe everything's going to be different with the Freddie Kitchens regime. Thankfully, one and done there. So we'll see what happens. But Jadeveon might not want to go there. So stay tuned. Jalen Ramsey, he will not hold out of training camp, he says. This comes from Steve Weiss, our buddy, on Twitter, and it's coming off a year where, of course, Ramsey held the Jaguars hostage without a gun and forced them to trade the cornerback in the middle of last season. And now, with the Rams in an even trickier place, because Ramsey knows that he is going to get money from Los Angeles. He's thrown him a bone, it seems, at this time. Your thoughts, Greg?
Well, he said this right when he got traded, that he wouldn't hold out the next year. And based on Les Snead's comments, I think they've made some progress in doing a negotiation. So he feels good. He wants to be there. I think he feels like he's going to get that money eventually. He knows people are kind of annoyed at him of how last year was handled, so he can't go back on his word. And as many questions as there are about the Rams, and they're all fair, the secondary is pretty intriguing with Jalen Ramsey, and then you have a safety duo and former Around the NFL podcast guest John Johnson. Remember him, Dan? Yeah, I mean, that was a big moment for the show. And Taylor Rapp, and you got Troy Hill. I kind of like at cornerback. It's a little thin at cornerback, but that's plenty of talent. You can do a lot with Jalen Ramsey being your number one corner.
I was just disciplining my children. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was wondering what that was.
Don't be sorry. I mean, they deserve it, right? You know, leave daddy alone.
The garage. I told them when the podcast is recording, they know this by now. It's been months, and I know it's a tricky situation. Don't come in here. I have a 100-foot wire, hardline wire, connecting my laptop to the router in the living room. So when you run in here and you're 3 years old, you're 5 years old, there's like a 70% chance you're going to trip over the wire. That's exactly what happened. We're lucky I'm still involved in the conversation. And now I had to dole out some verbal punishment there. That's what dad's got to do. I put it on mute because the audience didn't need to hear it.
Right. You hit that mute button, but the three of us could tell that something was going on there. You looked deeply involved in a parenting issue, which we all respect.
Are you the disciplinarian, Dan? Between you and Emily, is there a disciplinarian between you two, or is it shared equally?
I mean, it's not good cop, bad cop by any stretch, but I would say it's traditional, at least how I was raised, that mom is obviously a figure of respect and don't mess with her. But, you know, if I come into the room when they're not listening to reason from mom, it kind of things have stepped up a notch. It's that type of vibe. It's how I was raised anyway. What about you guys?
Stern face.
Yeah. I don't know. Lindsay, was that what's going on in your house? Are you the one with the iron hammer ultimately?
The whip cracker.
I think I'm probably tougher than my husband in that regard.
Mm. Yeah, but I don't think that. I think it depends on the house. I think it depends on the kid, too. Like, I would say, you know, like, depending on of our kid, they're more afraid of me or Emeka. But I feel like their ultimate fear is they're more afraid of their mom than they are of me.
Which, you and Emeka don't strike me as, like, a totally intimidating duo, fair there. But, I mean, our house has just slipped into total lawlessness, so I don't. There is no authority figure here.
The kids are in control. Finally, in the news, interesting piece from Richard Deitch over at The Athletic, an interview with Booger McFarland, who, of course, has just been relieved of his duties on Monday Night Football. He started in the Boogermobile in year one there. Year two, they moved Witten out, or he moved back to the Cowboys, and McFarland moved back to the booth with Tessitore, his old buddy from the SEC network. And it was an enlightening conversation between Deitch and Booger. And Greg, what did you kind of take out of the interview?
There was a lot. I have a few things, but the part where he said he read all the criticism and that anyone who doesn't say they see that is lying stuck with me. So he knew what was out there in terms of all the heat he was taking. And the thing I found interesting just in terms of how the firing was handled was, like, he got at the point where in TV, they never tell you why. He was like, I didn't even ask. Like, I would like to have known, but they don't tell you. You know, I heard this was coming. By the time they tell me, it's already over. They made up their minds and I'm never going to really find out. And he said that was frustrating, but he also said he understood it because he mentioned the speed of the game being so fast. And he meant,
yeah, that was interesting.
He talked about the Witten. He didn't even mention the Witten year until Deitch brought it up. It was like the Witten year never happened. He talked about his first year as last year. And he also mentioned how he's so comfortable in the studio, that he's done that forever, that he has all these reps and the speed of the game is slow there. And then you put it back on ESPN. Well, why are you putting a guy in a booth that's never been in a booth? Not only are you putting him in a Boogermobile the first year with Jason Witten, who was struggling, and he tried to defend Witten, but he was just saying who's going to be their best the first year. He basically said that the speed of the game was too fast for him at points. which makes sense because he's never broadcast the game before, basically. He was a studio guy. And like that's ESPN's fault. That's not really Booger McFarland's fault.
Lindsay, you've had a great career starting out at USC and doing all the business there, and that you've been all over the country as a broadcaster. Have you ever done anything in the booth? Have you ever done any calling games or anything like that?
No. I mean, I've done sideline. I have no interest in calling games because I just know that wouldn't be anything I'd be good at, frankly. And so I can relate. I always kind of felt a little bit badly for Booger because I think what he realized and what people at home don't know is that I think the speed of the game is a very important point. It's easy to sit on your couch and jump in when you have a thought, but to have a thought all the time and you're constantly talking. And when you're the third person, like he was in year one, the pace is different. You know, he could jump in and add a point. Whereas when you're the person in the booth, you have to have a point about all of it. And so when you say speed of the game's moving fast, but you're like checking your notes, you're looking at, like, there's no time to do that if you're in a booth where you are expected to be the primary voice and you've just never done it before. You haven't had a chance to figure out the flow of broadcasting a game. It's so different than being in a studio or anything else. It's just, it feels like you're playing catch up the whole time. You just can't be in that position. I don't know why he read the criticism, though. Like, you know that it exists if you're him because he's, like, the number one trending topic every Monday night for crying out loud. So, like, I'm sure he's hearing it. But if he's reading his mentions or anything like that, I think, oh, my gosh, like, protect your sanity. You have to avoid that. You have to learn how to avoid that.
Well, I thought it was he talked about the fact that he had a real thick skin and that it didn't bother him the way it might someone else, because as a player, you're so used to just absorbing fan abuse that you maybe become more practiced at not having it hit you. But I mean, it humanized the whole Monday Night Football thing for me a little bit. We've been tough on that broadcast, I think fairly. But also that, you know, if you're those guys, you're announcing Monday Night Football in a pretty terrible era with Twitter existing during games. This just was not the case, you know, back in the day where they might have a good show or not. But you're not hearing it from 6,000 jabronis tweeting 4 billion times during the game. And I mean, even for us, we dip at varying levels of what impacts us. I remember one of the first articles I ever wrote at NFL.com, the first comment was, "You are dumb and your children are dumb." I didn't even have children at that point. So I don't know if that was a prediction or what, but I still remember little things like that. Or when someone really hits you with an arrow that is truly mean, like, some people can just not care. I care about that stuff. You don't want to cling to it forever, but if you're boogering those guys, you got to have a thick skin to get through those seasons.
And doing this show as long as we have and working with the NFL, it definitely gives you a little more perspective on getting criticism. I definitely handle criticism better now than I did 7 or 8 years ago, for sure, when it comes online. But I think my takeaway, and I didn't really need to read this article to have this takeaway, but it is a good reminder. If you care to have a more nuanced take on this, something like this, other than, oh, Booger sucks, you have to understand that these decisions and his performance, it doesn't exist in a vacuum. And the fact that he struggled on that show on Monday Night Football was not just on him. Everyone put it all on the personality. Jason Witten, I'll even include here, as much as he struggled on his own right. But it's the position they put him in, putting him in the Boogermobile where he's in a seatbelt going 15 miles an hour up and down the sideline, then jump pumping him upstairs and giving him no reps to learn how to do that job. I totally see where he's coming from. And sometimes the network, and I'm not just single out ESPN, it could be NFL Network, it could be anyone, they deserve more blame than the actual individual does when things go sideways.
It's like an NFL team that always struggles because of bad ownership. And I don't think Monday Night Football has had that sort of consistent struggles. But this is 100% on the decision makers. The fact that they put Witten in that scenario and then that it didn't quite work out with Booger. I did want to mention one other thing he talked about, which was not related to Monday Night Football. But he was so cogent on it. I think it was important.
Nice, cogent.
To put out there, which is he was really against college football coming back in the fall. And he said it's one thing if you're a pro and you're making money and you're making that decision that it's like, I'm a corporation. I'm going out there. I'm feeding my family. it's another totally hypocritical thing to say we're going to social distance the crowd at a college football game, but we're going to make the players play for us. And that they're, you know, they're playing for free, obviously, and it's a totally different – that they're going to be tackling each other, and there's going to be 100 people on the sidelines. And if you send your kids to school there, we'll try to keep them safe in the crowd, or if you want to go to the game. But we don't really care about these kids that are out there. And if it's like an 18, 19-year-old kid, he was thinking about his kids, he had a big problem with that. I thought that was a really interesting point on the difference of thinking about this fall in terms of college versus – the pros.
There's so many college kids though, because then what do you do if you're trying to, like, you don't want to lose that year of eligibility. You don't want to, or obviously they figure out something about eligibility, but like you don't want to lose that year of athletic activity if you're trying to make it to the league. If you're one of those guys that is trying to do this professionally, you can't just sit on the sideline for a year and expect that then you're still going to be fine trying to get to the league. I feel bad for those kids too that would be put in that position. Not to say, like, yes, you should play college football,
right? They
of that,
pulled
but
a bunch
I mean,
of
I can see how this would be a complicated thing.
They pulled a bunch of college players, and I've seen like two or three of these articles where the vast majority want to play. Right. But I think, Greg, what Booger mentioned is the ethical dilemma in this, and sorry, but it applies to the NFL too. I don't care about the money or not. I get that it's pro and you want to shove them everyone out there in time for training camp, but the ethical questions are draped over every one of these sports.
All right. That's what's happening in the news. Good convo, guys. Before we get to our deep dive on the G-Men, Greg, it is time now for you to distill everything that you've taken out of your projected starter series. And just for the people that maybe aren't properly educated, what is the projected starter series exactly? I guess it's self-evident, but just let people know what you
do. NFL.com/projected starters. We got all 22 players, I think, are going to get the most snaps for each team, but then with a bunch of notes for each team too, which is the part, you know, that I enjoy. It's one of my favorite things to do every year. Mark Sessler liked it, so that's a big.
It's a good read.
Like, yeah,
it's the little bullet point nuggets that you offer are.
It's the nuggets. It's right. One of my favorite little things we do every year. So
is
I'm going to try to
Mark,
boil it down.
Is there an article that jumps out? By the way, is there one piece, maybe non-Browns related, that jumps out to you?
I thought, for instance, he did a really nice job on the Giants, who we're going to dig into today, and talked about some of the, you know, Giants have a lot of issues, and Greg is skillful at, you know, exposing some of those issues, but not dropping a bomb on the G-men at the same time.
What would be an issue that you read in that article that Greg kind of?
He's trying to say he doesn't believe you that you actually read it. You know what? Mark sent me a text like 3 weeks ago. At least he was reading one of them and made some comments.
I did.
So
I
how
read
dare you, Dan?
Yeah, Dan, that is. It's talk about ethical issues. I mean, you are dipped in them all day long.
All right. Okay. Get to it, Greg. You're going to give us 60 seconds of hot take?
I don't know. Yeah, we'll do 60 seconds of just some takeaways.
Like,
and that's enough. And who's going to – are you going to do a clock, Erica? Who's doing it? Because I need to be cut off or else it'll just go on forever.
All right, Ricky, put him on a clock for 60 seconds. And, Greg, whenever you're ready, let it rip.
Okay. Here we go. The Cowboys defensive line has one player returning – that had over 150 snaps on the team last year. That seems like a problem. I'd be a little worried about the Cowboys defense. The Raiders are the team that doing this exercise, I think I liked more after doing it. I think they're the second best team in the NFC West. No quarterback in the league. I think if you look at the whole situation, offensive line, coach, receivers, everything, I don't know if anyone has a worse situation than Dwayne Haskins. I mean, he is set up to fail. Teddy Bridgewater, love him in fantasy leagues this year. Their secondary is so bad after Dante Jackson. They're going to give up a ton of points. I like the weapons around them. They're going to have to score a ton. Steelers, take their top five on the defensive line in their front seven. That's the best top five in the league. Hayward, Tuitt, Watt, Dupree. Who am I forgetting? Bush. That's a good little group.
Running out of time.
Phillip Rivers, best offensive line he's ever played with. And I like the Colts defensive line too. So if you win in the trenches, I love the Colts this year. And then if we're running out of time here, how about the Colts, the Rams secondary, and the Texans offensive line? They both stunk last year and they brought back all the same players. That's not a good thing.
Ooh, what is that? That feels good.
Time's up.
Lindsay, I edited out my Patriots homer take just for you guys.
Do you feel educated, Lindsay, after that?
Relax. like I'm at a spa or something with that music.
Very nice.
It's not how I felt during the 60 water. Seconds. It felt very stressful, and then so this is nice. It's a come down.
Well, I would say if you're looking for any constructive criticism there,
never.
Greg, when you started naming people on the Steelers defensive line and front seven, that really hurt you. That cost you 7 or 8 seconds easily.
That's fair. I think it's good though. Then people know who I'm talking about. But you're right.
What was your Patriots homer take? I'm just curious.
Why not? They've got. I think you could argue pretty strong. They got a top five offensive line, a top five secondary, and the greatest coach in history. So let's stop talking about them as their crazy talent poor. Those are important parts of your team, offensive line and secondary.
It's fair. 10-6.
I don't. Yeah, that's a little optimistic, but we'll see.
Why not? I can see that.
I got to see what Stidham looks like.
All right, it's time. It's time to continue the wheel of teams. The New York Giants is where it landed on Monday. So a little background on the G-Men. Established 1925, 8 NFL championships, 5 Super Bowl appearances, 4 victories. The last appearance, 2012, a win over the Patriots, Super Bowl 46. They went 4-12 in 2019. And they're coached by Joe Judge, who's in his first season with the team. Yes, the Giants are starting over. And to join us in this conversation, we welcome in a man who serves as an NFL columnist for Newsday. He's the author of Guts and Genius, a great deep dive into pro football during the Reagan era, as I call it. Some people just say 80s, but I like to give it that little extra flair. And let us not forget, I know Sessler hasn't, this man is also the president of the Pro Football Writers of America. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Glauber.
Ooh.
What's up, heroes?
I mean, we bring you on, Glauber, and your phone is ringing. This isn't helping your case that that your demographic it's a little older than ours. Maybe
he had his wife do that to give him like a rap sheet thing there.
No, I'm like, who is that? I mean, come on, it's who it was, another old timer, Neil Best. Okay,
I know Neil Best. Great,
here he is again.
Great TV columnist from Newsday. I mean, what, is he just because of a hot take on Mike and the Mad Dog? Yeah. Come on. Oh, he's answering the phone, Glauber. This is just pathetic. Just sad.
Yeah,
he's a newsmaker. He's
I've got to go, Neil. Okay?
Listen to this.
This is special.
Bob, you respect Neil more than us? What is going on, Bob?
Well, I had to take his call because he would have kept calling. You want to keep getting interrupted?
Well, right, Neil's been fair. On the show out of nowhere, so it's a big, big event for him too.
You can silence
Bob. How many years?
You can turn it off. You can do all sorts of things.
How many years, Bob? You've been covering New York sports and the pro football scene. Where are we?
Well,
at? What
New
are we
York
up
sports,
to? Now?
New York sports. I've been covering since 1979.
Wow, that's 41.
I started in 79. Covered them in their Stanley Cup years, and then football started in 1985.
Wow!
Before, wow! So you've seen a lot.
A twinkle in your daddy's eye.
I wouldn't go that far. Well, actually, yes. When you started, Bob, that was exactly the year I was a twinkle.
Yeah.
So
Mark was in middle school then. So it was
I was born, but I will say that you hit the New York football scene at the exact right time. That's true. 85, please.
Oh, my goodness. I'm telling you, I am grateful to have started then because it could have been 84, 83. But they were starting to get good. The Giants were starting to get good. The Jets were good at that time. And the Bill Parcells era was spectacular. And it was incredibly memorable, not only for fans and for football enthusiasts, but for journalists. No better training than to be in a Bill Parcells press conference and get leaked on relentlessly and continuously, but to the point where I can now call this man and say, hey, how you doing? he was quite a character, and it was tough. It was very challenging as a journalist, believe it or not, because he was like, you know, he was into it. He would challenge you big time, but it was great.
He's my favorite football personality ever. And I'm biased because of my New York ties and his run with the Jets. But in general, no matter where he's been, to me, he was always such a compelling figure. And his personality, he's such a Jersey guy. It was all like what you see is what you get with Parcells. Maybe we'll have and you could read more about it, as Bob points out, with a shameless plug on Guts and Genius, Bob's book you released last year. All right, let's get into it, Bob. Let's get into the present. The Giants are starting over mostly. You have the same GM, Dave Gettleman, but a new head coach and a new franchise quarterback in Daniel Jones entering his first full season as starter. What's your general feel around this team right now? Does it feel like almost a weight's been lifted off them now that Eli's out of the building and they're able to kind of move forward as an organization, as good as Eli was to that team?
Yeah. No, I think that's a fair point, Dan. And I think there is something to that. You know, that had to be a logical conclusion to the end of his career. I think it happened much sooner last year than anybody could have expected. It made it a little bit awkward. After just two games, they go to Daniel Jones. Certainly made it awkward for Eli Manning. And as Daniel Jones admitted a couple of weeks ago, it made it awkward for him too. I found, you know, Daniel Jones is extremely guarded. I mean, he makes Eli look like Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh no.
Because Daniel's just very careful. Eli loves Seinfeld, so he'd appreciate that. But Daniel's very, very careful, but you know, for him to admit that it was awkward, I thought was pretty striking. Now, of course, Eli himself said, "Yeah, it was kind of awkward." So I think Daniel agreed with it. But you know, you have to look at this now as, okay, this is Daniel Jones's team. There's no question, and that's a good thing for moving forward. You have a new coach. You have a coach who's now calling Daniel Jones by his name. So that's progress, and I think that they can move on. Judge refused to call players by their first name for quite a while. And I think that might have continued had we not had this interruption, because that was part of his deal, just earn your spot.
I mean, talk about playing it close to the vest. Judge seems pretty tight, you know, tightly wound. Daniel Jones is. Jason Garrett, you don't really think of as like a guy who's too loose. It's the New York media, and it's asking Garrett to integrate, you know, this new – he's going to be installing a new offense, an offensive line where everyone's changing. I guess Nate Solder is maybe going to play right tackle. They have a rookie at left tackle. We'll see. You know, it's not a bad-looking group, actually. The line looks pretty good, decent on paper. But any concern about the way this offense is going to be able to ramp up with like all these new pieces all kind of getting together and not being able to be on the field right now?
Any concern? I would say, you know, DEFCON 3.
Right.
Because, you know, start with the fact that everyone's new. Add in, they have not been together ever as a team. So, you know, Joe Judge, I think, has one of the hardest jobs in the NFL this year, you know, competing in a market that's really intense. I've been impressed with the way he's handled himself, if you can be impressed, you know, from a distance, because I think, you know, I think he gets it. I think he's not, you know, he's tightly wound, but I don't think he's tight. You know, I think he's got composure about him. Now, he's going to get intense during games. He got intense during games with the Patriots as an assistant. So he's going to get intense and appear tight, but I think he has good vision for what he wants from his team. And I think, you know, he'll handle it, but it's going to be an incredible work in progress. Second year quarterback, first year, full year as a starter, new offensive line, similar weapons. You do have Saquon Barkley, so there's continuation there, but man, for the most part, this is going to take a while.
When you look at Dave Gettleman and the team building, you know, experience, like there's a belief out there by some that if you don't see a front office really flipping the switch by year three, that you've got issues. And the Giants have won, what, 12 games in the past three seasons. That said, I think to me, Gettleman feels a little bit like too easy of a whipping boy at times. And, and I get that, you know, he's a bit countercultural and, you know, doesn't seem to know how to turn on a laptop at times, things like that. And people have their fun with that. But you look at their draft. And I think that Andrew Thomas, I mean, forget what the media thinks. A lot of people thought Andrew Thomas was a perfect pick for them right there. Xavier McKinney, the safety they got, is being compared to Minkah Fitzpatrick. So I think they had one of the better drafts in the NFC. But do you trust, from where you sit, Dave Gettleman as a team builder in 2020 versus, you know, 2000 or something? Is he building a team for modern football?
Yeah, that's a fair question, Mark, and I think the answer is I'm not sure. I think there are pieces with this team. I think there is some semblance of cohesion. Now, the DeAndre Baker, we haven't talked about that. You know, that situation is going to impact potentially extremely negatively on Dave Gettleman because, you know, let's face it, he traded up three picks to get a player who might not be with the team.
And there were questions about Baker going into the draft. I mean, that's kind of why he was there at number 30, people thought.
Yes, there were questions. I don't know that there were any questions to the level of something that allegedly happened, right? So in fairness, I don't know that the concerns rose to that level. But that said, you know, that's on him. And this is a bottom line business, and he's got to take the hit for that if we find out that this is a player that's not going to be with the team. So I think there are elements of the team that have come together, Mark, and I think that, you know, building the offensive line, like he said at the draft, you know, we finally got to get this right, all right? And I think they've gone a long way toward getting it right. You may see Solder at right tackle. Right now it's Thomas at right tackle on the depth chart and then Solder at left tackle, and he's coming off an admittedly bad year. He had some personal issues with his child that were happening at the same time. So – you know, there are some pieces here and there are some building blocks, but I think there's genuine concern that, you know, is Gettleman a modern day general manager who can kind of adapt to today's world with a little bit of a, you know, Stegosaurus burger type look at, you know, how football is built from the lines out, you know, the big men, and that's all well and good, but it's a different game now and it's a totally different game. We'll have it's a big year for him.
Here's an optimistic spin on this, Bob, and you tell me if it's a little too pie in the sky. So Daniel Jones certainly flashed last year as a rookie, and I know that you could definitely get on him for lack of ball security, but, you know, you imagine that in year two, he could button up some of those issues. Saquon Barkley, when healthy, is arguably the best running back in the league. Their wide receiver group, while it doesn't like jump out in conversations of the best triplets in the league, I like Golden Tate as a player. Sterling Shepard, we've always loved if he could stay on the field. And Darius Slayton kind of broke out last year as a nice draft pick there when given opportunities. And then Evan Ingram, another guy that, yes, he's had injury issues, but an explosive playmaker when on the field. Yep. How hard do you really have to squint, honestly? And the offensive line, obviously, we were talking about that question marks there, but they did address that with three draft picks, and including the big man at four overall. I mean, how hard do you have to squint to see this as a potentially not just like proficient offense, but a very good offense? I think it's potentially in play here. Crazy?
Very good offense. I mean, I guess you could see flashes. I need to see more consistency from Daniel Jones. You mentioned ball security. Fumbling was a problem. He's working on that in the offseason. You know, Barkley was stopped. No matter how good your running back is, teams can stop that. And the receivers, I'd say, are, you know, good, not great. I love Shepard. And Slayton was a nice surprise. And Golden Tate is a good possession receiver. You don't have a true home run hitter. Okay, you can live without that. And Ingram
and Slayton and Barkley.
Big time explosiveness, right? But I don't know. You put that all together, and you have a new system, a new offense, a new offensive coordinator, and a new offensive line. That's an awful lot. I think talent, yes, on paper it's there. But, I mean, I don't know. I'm not looking at a playoff offense in my mind just yet.
I'm with you, Dan, though. I don't think you have to squint that hard. My bigger concern is Garrett. is whether they have the coach to take advantage of being explosive or whether he's just going to want to run the ball like crazy, like he talks about, and whether they're going to take advantage of all these guys, whether he's the guy to develop Daniel Jones. And maybe he'll prove me wrong there, but they just sound like they want to play it close to the vest, where I'm with you, Dan, that they have enough weapons that actually I think they should take advantage of that, because they're going to have to. Their defense, I'm rambling a little bit here, but the defense looks terrible on paper, and they have a coordinator who's never done anything, Patrick Graham, who's coming from Miami. So that, to me, is the bigger concern, that if Baker's gone, that maybe is the worst secondary in the entire NFL, and you don't really have many natural pass rushers, and you have a coach that's never done anything. So you're going to have to score some points, I think, to keep up with this defense.
Yeah, welcome to Giants in 2019,
right?
2018, right? No, seriously, I mean, that's a huge problem. I remember Tom Coughlin, you know, toward the end of his run, just before they were consistently bad and you felt it was time for a change, but he had to coach differently. He had to take far more chances on offense, and he went for fourth downs more than he usually did, but because he had a defense that couldn't stop anybody. And remember the last year that after he left, they went on a spending binge in free agency, got in Olivier Vernon, Snacks Harrison. So they built their defense. But you have to coach differently when you can't stop anybody. And that's what hurt last year. Pat Shurmur had to be much more aggressive, and it burned him.
Let me ask you this real quick. I mean, Giants ownership, you know, and Dan mentioned he grew up in Giants, you know, towns. I grew up watching the Giants. It's the first team I remember. And they just had this undeniable identity with Parcells and with Belichick and their defensive staff. And it right up through Coughlin. I mean, they just were the Giants, and they were a different type of football team than anything else out there. They seem to have zero identity at the moment, on defense at least. And this ownership group, I mean, I know they've been annoyed, obviously, with what's happened the last couple of years. How patient will they be with Joe Judge if it's going to take, you know, this season's going to be rough potentially with no real training camp, if that's how it plays out. But let's say they struggle, you know, for a year or two. Is Joe Judge going to get the 1-2 year deal and you're done? Or are they committed to really like seeing this through for once? There's been so much turnover there.
Yeah, that's a fair question. And I think the answer is Joe Judge gets at least 2 or 3 years of, you know, like there's going to be no problem with that, because they really truly believe that they have a good young coach who can last a long time. I think Gettleman is the guy who would be on the hot seat if they go south, record wise. I think they would be no problem making a change there, that they would do that and hope that someone else coming in as a general, because they do like that structure of general manager. They don't want to make Joe Judge into Bill Belichick in terms of giving him all the authority with personnel. So I think they will be patient with him. They're aware of it. John Mara is aware of it. You know, he grew up, John Mara, I've known him, you know, since 85, and went before he was like the lead executive of this team. And it was good to kind of see him just as an everyman type person. And
humble brag.
He lived with heartache growing up, because when he grew up, his father's teams were terrible.
Yeah.
John Mara did not want to go to school. Like Wellington had to force him to go to school on Monday mornings after a terrible loss. And John was afraid. His classmates would make fun of him. So, I mean, that's ingrained in him. He's impatient and he's driven. But I think that he will give Joe Judge the benefit of time, because he feels like he found somebody that he can win with over a long period of time. And I think he's willing to go through the inevitable ups and downs that you have with a first-year coach.
The trick is, though, you know, Gettleman, if he's on the hot seat, then you're just falling into this cycle again, where it's like the coach and the GM didn't come in at the same time and they're not aligned. And that's the Giants used to say they were sort of above that. You know, we keep, you know, coaches for a long time, we keep GMs, all the GMs at this point still have like a Giants lineage, but that then you're falling into some of the troubles that some really bad franchises get into. So it's like, you almost have to keep Gettleman at this point if Judge is there and see it out, even if it doesn't make a lot of sense.
You only get to have coaches that hang around for a long time if you hire the right coach in the first place.
Right, exactly. Like
exactly. Haven't been nailing that lately.
I think you'll be able to see what, you know, what Judge is, even this year. Maybe you'll see it even more because of the challenges. But I see what you're saying, Greg. the coach GM thing is really important. It's really hard. And I think the Giants had a long run where they just had George Young, didn't have to worry about it. George hires Ernie Accorsi, trains him up the way he, you know, sees fit. Ernie builds a Super Bowl roster that Jerry Reese inherits, and Jerry Reese was the last scout hired by George Young. So there was this uninterrupted line of succession from 1979 through the end of the Jerry Reese era a couple of years ago. That was, and then, you know, you could say that Gettleman
was part of it.
Yes, but he wasn't hired by this George Young direct legacy. And yet Gettleman is part of that franchise earlier on. He was more of a Coughlin guy. So, they love the structure of GM and coach, and probably lost them Bill Parcells in 90 because of that, because he and George Young didn't get along. But they like that structure, and if it doesn't work, you're right. They will have to make some adjustments. But I don't think there is the kind of loyalty to Dave Gettleman in the Giants front office that there was with George Young, certainly, and Ernie Accorsi, and to a lesser degree, Jerry Reese. I just don't think – I think they would make a move sooner.
Bob, pivoting before we say goodbye, I'd like just to see where we're at right now. You are, of course, the president of the Pro Football Writers of America. It's been a sore spot. For a certain member of this podcast, I'll point out it's Mark Sessler, that we are not members of this esteemed group. Is there any movement on this front from the Prez to get us involved with your great organization?
Well, first of all, I wanted to talk to Mark. I said, Mark, can we talk at the combine?
And
we
you did
get a chance.
You did. And that felt like about 22 years ago. But I do. You made a point of wanting to have a discussion.
He did as usual. He's like, we'll do it on the podcast. I'm not doing this unless it's content. No, I'm sorry. That's just how Mark rolls.
First of all, I'm imagining, what am I going to tell Mark? And here's part of it. And I was going to hope to save this for a private conversation, but let's be out in the open. We met at the combine several years ago. I said, you chuckleheads have a good chemistry. All right. Is that correct, Rosie?
Yes, it is.
Right? That's
right.
I remember.
That's right.
Factual.
We're in the back of the press room at the Lucas Oil Stadium. I said, there's something about you guys. You guys are big in London, for God's sake. You attract crowds at London pubs. At least that's what your Twitter says, right? You're internationally famous. Why do you give anything? You know, why do you care about this?
I mean, I see myself, you know, I have a little bit of shared DNA with Michael Jordan, where I'm just looking for that one thing that can get me motivated. And sometimes it's got to be something that I, you know, positive reinforcement doesn't do it with me. It's got to be something that gets me riled up. And, you know, this didn't start with you. You've at least attempted to address the topic. It was some previous presidents.
Yeah, Trotter blew us off with a letter.
Well, you know,
really?
It's nice to get to know him since, and I see that probably was just the machinations of how it all works. I'm sure he didn't sit down and type that letter.
Mark, backpedaling like Deion Sanders here.
Let's just say, I give Glauber a lot of credit for reaching out and addressing the issue.
Here's the answer, Bob. I think it's because you capital J journos in your ivory towers. You're looking at these podcast bozos. And they work for the NFL. They must be just biased. They're not.
They don't
real
spend time
college.
In locker rooms. They don't pound the pavement. They haven't paid their dues.
So they can get all the London fans they want. Doesn't mean they have integrity. I think that's what you're covertly saying to us.
Put it out in the open, Bob.
No. Hey, buddy. Hey, what's up? Greg. If I didn't think you had integrity. Shame on me. Come on, man. It's not integrity. There is a line. There is a line of demarcation. And that line is, it's a pretty strong line.
Yeah.
So
Mark, we're just gonna have to exist on the outside the fringes of the establishment. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yep. See, this is good, though. You guys are like the outsiders, right?
We operate in the shadows, and we will continue to do so.
Hey, we're the outsiders, man. We're going to come in there and kick some butt.
Yeah. The bad boys. That's what we are. Bob, you've said it all. Yes. Thank you for giving us the insight. And I hope your family and friends all staying healthy during these trying times. And it was just great to see you and great to hear you.
Great. Shout out to my mother. My mother beat it, man. She beat COVID.
She did.
Wow. That's awesome, Bob.
That's good.
Well, that's great. That's great to hear. There you go. Mama Glauber.
Thank you. Mama Glaubs. Got it done.
All right. Well, best wishes to Mom as well. Thank you, Bob, for talking some Giants football there. And let's end our little Giants chat, guys, with a little over under. I'm going to start here. Giants. 7.5 wins, Greg.
Under. Strong under.
I'm going over. I think they'll be 8-8.
Wow. Giants.
See, I'm kind of with you. I'm taking the over here. I don't see the NFC East as this like incredible division that's going to have teams that are going to be soaring. I think it's going to be a dogfight, and I think the Giants are going to be able to hang in this division. I really do.
That's our East Coast bias, but we're sticking with it.
All right, what about, let's go, Saquon Barkley over under 2,000 yards, total yards.
It's the right number. I'm going to just say under because it's so awesome that trying to expect that out of a Jason Garrett back. But it's certainly possible, but I'll go under.
I'll go under, but I wonder what Bob thinks.
I'll go under on everything. I mean, you were the guys who say, hey, they don't have to squint to see greatness there. Rosie, you all of a sudden, I take the under. I just think it's an awful lot to ask of a first-year coach with no work with his players in the entire offseason. The first time he gets together might be training camp to come in cold. 7.5, man, that's a pretty big number. Given those circumstances and given that defense, which we talked about.
They haven't been together. It's tough to do things you've never done before, like having a Zoom call with a guest like Bob Glauber, where Dan tries to say like bye to the guest mid-convo, but then he's still on the video, and then we bring him back in. Like, we don't know what we're doing.
You can sign off at any time, Bob.
We thought we were signing off, but I want Bob the whole show. Let's keep him.
You guys can kick me off. Just get the hook.
Well, we can't do it with you just sitting there. You know, if you're just watching us, really,
I'll go off that. You guys, I'm grateful to be with the heroes. My best to Wes and Link. And
yes,
great stuff there.
All right. There, Bob.
Bye, Bob.
You.
Thank you.
All right, see you
love
guys.
That man. All right. Thank you to Bob Glauber. And before we say goodbye, let's welcome back Lindsay Rhodes and also welcome in some people that we love. All right. So thank you to Bob Glauber. That was awesome. But now as we tease something that we've been waiting all week for, we want to see what the updated Wesseling clan looks like. So here they are for the first time on the podcast. There is Lakeisha, Chris Wesseling, and baby Link.
Oh, Link, a little
first
fussy.
Time. Look at that dude. Oh,
what a cutie.
Lincoln just is he's got an eye for the camera. He's lightening up.
This is a onesie courtesy of his Nana Rhoda.
Has what does it say?
Report on it.
Pass the podcast headphones, Dad. I got your back.
And I have to say, as someone that's known for his hair on this podcast, Lincoln looks like he might be coming for the throne. Look at that full head of hair.
Well,
this guy's 6 days old.
He didn't get it from me.
How is everybody doing? What's going on over there?
Exhausted. That's the key word. I feel like a zombie. I don't know how people with two kids do it because one, it's like Chris, I feel like he changes like 50 diapers a day. And I'm either feeding, but it's all worth it.
Well, we had that whole it's over for the Wesleys thing where everybody told us we wouldn't have a social life. And we, you know, and we were like, no, we'll be different. And everybody kind of patted us on the head like, that's cute. That's cute. You think you're going to be different. And now it's like, when do you come up for air?
Yeah.
It's about 18 years from now.
It lasted like 4 days before giving up on all that. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, this in terms of sleep, you know, you're recovering from birth and a surgery, Keisha. It'll get better.
And disclaimer, if I cry, I'm sorry. I cry at everything now. I don't know how long that will last. I would like to be my normal self again one day, but right now everything makes me cry.
We were watching a show last night on the Smithsonian Channel about the Mississippi River, and they were talking about beavers. The parents work up to 20 hours a day, and Keisha's like, I hear you. I feel like a damn beaver.
Oh, man.
Oh, this is amazing. Look at that guy. So well behaved, too. He's just totally chilling right now.
He's chilling.
You're not even asking the right questions, Dan. Like, is he sleep? Are you guys sleeping? Chris, are you getting up? Or are you being a good husband?
I know the answers, Erica. I've been there.
They told us. They told
I just want to hear them. I just talk to me.
Erica, it is hard as F. Me, maybe Lindsay can give me some tips. I can't sleep when he sleeps because I'm constantly getting up to make sure like he's breathing. So I can hardly ever sleep. And I'm constantly telling, waking him up to, you know, feed, not feed him, but change his diaper because then he'll give it to me to feed. But it's just like, I can't get any sleep.
I'm guessing you guys all went through this, but it's hard to get excited during the pregnancy. At least it was for me because he's not in my body. And then you meet him and right. then you're excited. You know, I can't, the phrase over the moon has been in my vocabulary and it seems like everyone else's vocabulary. Everybody's over the moon. In Australia, they're chuffed. Chuffed for you, mate.
That part's been cute. Like seeing Chris super excited. I'm just like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
That is super cute.
Yeah.
So cute. It's stupid.
You look tired, Wes. You look tired. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wes, I just wanted to pass on that.
Like, I'm having flashbacks that aren't necessarily great.
if you got any tips, I would appreciate them. I used the little Sully wrap yesterday, and that was a game changer because usually I'm just stuck on the couch. Like, we moved our whole operation into the living room. He's on one end of the couch. I'm on the other end of the couch. We've got the bassinet in there, and just that's where our setup is. And I'm just stuck on the couch all the time with him. I'm a boob. But yesterday I got to use the Sully wrap and actually get up and like...
Wes or Link?
Man.
I walked into the bedroom and saw the bed and I was like, oh, I got emotional. Like, I remember that thing. I used to sleep there.
Yeah. It's
yet,
over, Wes.
Yeah.
Well,
and he poops all the time. Poops and pees all the time.
Well, how has it been getting back home? Because you were at the hospital for 5 days and Wes was there without being able to leave, which is a unique experience, I think, for the dad because of COVID. So how has it been getting back to your house? I know you guys, you know, in another world, maybe your mom, Keisha, would be there. So you're not getting some of the help that some other moms are getting. But like, how has it been since you got back home?
It's been... Sorry, I told y'all I cry at everything. It's been, our neighbors helped out a lot. It really sucks not having my mom here to help. She's going to be flying out at some point soon because the Longs, JB Longs, they have a little guest house in their backyard and they're going to let her quarantine out there so she can be at her to help us and stuff. But I can't say enough about our neighbors. They've been dropping off food. Yesterday, our direct next door neighbor, the Palmers, they dropped off appetizer, I think, at what, 6 o'clock, dinner at 7,
dessert at 8.
Like, it's just, they've all just been so wonderful because they know the situation that we're in right now. So it's kind of like having a little extended family that you didn't know that you had.
It's kind of weird for me because I have 5 younger brothers. Oh. So I did all this stuff, but it was in the 1980s. And the technology in baby care is like, so different compared to what we grew up with. And during the process, the last 9 months, I'm like, oh, you don't need all that stuff. Like, you know, all these newfangled parents with their gadgets. We need all of it.
Yeah.
We need all of it. It's a battle we're fighting. It's a war. And we need all the weaponry we can get.
I like getting the Wes update on baby technology innovations. I wasn't expecting that one.
Yeah, I mean, the car seats, the strollers, the bouncy toys, everything's so much different than it was.
He's finally napping, took a nap in his bouncy today. That was a life changer. I got to get so much stuff done during that time, but then I also had to keep, again, checking on him because if he's been for an extended amount of time, I freak out. Like, I'm always constantly putting my hand on his near his face, being like, do I feel anything? Okay, he's still breathing. We're good. 6 days, we're doing good.
Very normal young parent stuff. I remember doing all that. And just to kind of put a button on it, you said, when do you come up for air?
Yeah.
That's really hard to say. I don't know. I mean, from this phase, this newborn phase, maybe it will take, you know, a few weeks, few months, whatever. But in another way, I feel like we still haven't in our house come up for air since the first baby landed. It's a game changer. Yeah. I guess you're living underwater in some ways at that
two and
point.
A half
now
years,
Aquaman
maybe.
And three. Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when you come up.
But
for
2036
for free.
He's a beautiful boy, and we are so happy for you guys.
All right.
We'll let you get back to your parenting and your poop cleaning and your checking for breathing and all that great fun young parent stuff. Congratulations and enjoy this special time.
All right, thanks guys. See you.
Guys. Love you guys. Love you, Lincoln.
Love you.
Link, we have another boy in the family. Unbelievable.
Yep, a young tape dog.
To? Two, four, five seven. Boys and one girl.
Yeah, poor Ellis, my daughter. You know, she needs another pal. Another girl pal. Maybe Wesley and kid number two. The problem with them coming up for air for 3 years. Well, we don't even want to. We don't even want to get into Dan's predictions of June, when this next one might be coming.
Right.
Oh, it's coming. It's
now
coming.
Now is not the time.
Lindsay, your final thoughts on motherhood.
Well, I was thinking that quarantine might actually be kind of an added bonus for them, because while her mom can't, like, you want those types of people around. One of the things that I remember as a new parent is when people would come visit, I was like, I will never do this to someone again, because they just come visit and they want to see the baby. Like, if you want to go visit a brand new baby, bring either food or do something when you're there, because it's just time that the mother or father don't have to just sit and visit. I remember always being like, I really want to see you, but like the fact that there's downtime right now, I have to sleep. And this is stressing me out that I'm not sleeping during this time. So they cut out all of the people who just want to come by and see the baby that they don't have time for. So that's a win.
And Lakeisha's mom coming that's a little true. Later is not the worst. One thing I thought about was, you know, moms and help and friend, they're always there for, it's always there the first 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever it is. But you're in the exact same situation in month 2, 3, 4, 5. So it's fine. If the mom comes out a little later for a month, like, you need the help just as much in month 3, pretty much as month 1. So it's okay. Spread it out.
All right, Lindsay, you've come in and you've done it again. You've done it again, Lindsay. You've said it all.
Thanks.
You've done it all. And every time you're on the show, we love it. And it's a lot of fun. So thank you again for joining the Around the NFL podcast. One of the great friends of the show.
Absolutely.
Lindsay Rhodes.
Technological disadvantages and all.
Yes, but we survived it, and we will be back on Friday with the Around the NFL broadcast on NFL Network. Make sure you check that out, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, with some re-airings throughout the weekend. Set your DVRs. Support the show if you can. And on this podcast, how about over on iTunes, leave 5 stars in a review. That always helps us as well. And check out the Around the NFL subreddit. This is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman was here. Lakeisha, Lincoln, the old boss, Lindsay Rhodes, and of course, Ricky Hollywood in West Hollywood. Until Friday!
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.